I'm joined today by Dr. Jenny Schneider. Jenny is the former Chief Medical Officer and President of Livongo. Prior to that, she was the Chief Medical Officer of Castlight Health. Jenny trained as an internal physician at Johns Hopkins and Stanford, where she was a chief resident. She recently joined the board of directors of CityBlock and as an executive in residence at Endurance Partners, a private equity firm in New York City. In this episode of Tuning Healthcare, Jen and I discuss the lessons you can learn from being a parent and an athlete and how you can apply those to business. How we can solve health inequality, especially through the advancement of value-based care and the better use of data. Jenny shares which current healthcare trends will be boomerangs and which will be frisbees. And finally, if there is one thing that Jenny could change about healthcare, it would be data interoperability and transparency. Join Jenny and me as we tune healthcare. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd love to start by learning a little bit more how you got into medicine, what inspired you to do that, and then also what inspired you to sort of move to the business side and focus on sort of the impact you could have on the business side of healthcare as opposed to purely just on the clinical side.
Sure. Well, thanks for the opportunity to converse with you. So delighted to get to be able to do that today. My journey is that I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 12. And that was a pretty deep jump into the deep end of water in the healthcare ecosystem. I come from a family where there are no physicians and very few healthcare workers writ large. And it was really from that experience that I was inspired to go into healthcare. And a large part of that was my own endocrinologist was a man named Dr. Robert Nelson. And he was wonderful in terms of allowing me at the age of 12 to take ownership of the condition and ownership of the day-to-day decisions, not my parents, but me. And that experience resonated a lot with me. And I think has actually shaped how I think about healthcare today in terms of this idea of empowering people to allow them to make optimal choices. The jump into business was not intentional. I'm a somewhat non-linear person. What I am absolutely at my core is interested in core, gnarly, hard ideas. And so I had this opportunity. I did my medical training, medical school at Johns Hopkins. I did my residency at Stanford. I did a CHEEP year, which is like a junior faculty year. And then I had an opportunity to go back and get a master's in health services research, which is how do you look at data, big amounts of data, and make healthcare decisions. And in that journey, I had an opportunity to work for a gentleman named Giovanni Colella, who's a serially successful entrepreneur. And at that time was starting a company that had undergone three name iterations, Maria Health to Ventana Health, and then became Castlight Health. And the problem they were trying to tackle was how do you create a free market in healthcare? And as someone who was, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt from a very expensive medical school, which I enjoyed, it was the right decision, but I definitely had a financial debt coming out of that. It used to drive me crazy that my friends would complain about a $40 copay to go see their doctors, yet they'd easily drop $200 to get their hair cut. And the person who was doing their hair hadn't graduated from high school. And here I was a physician trying to repay my hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans. And this idea around not truly understanding the value in healthcare and the shrouding of the costs and the quality was really, I think, an incredible problem to tackle. And that's what Castlight did. So I didn't join intending to go into digital health, intending to go into business. I joined a very powerful and, you know, inspiring leader to tackle a thorny problem in healthcare.
That's amazing. So do you think we've made any progress in the consumer understanding the cost of healthcare, understanding the sort of the pros and cons of picking one physician over another?
I don't think we've crossed the finish line on that, but I know we've made a substantial success. And the reason I know that is from when I started at Castlight, we used to have to pull up these slides to say to our client, large self-insured employer, all of your in-network prices, let's pick colonoscopy or x-ray, in-network docs. Look at, there's like a 300x variability for in-network docs. And people would be like, what? That's amazing. There was then a whole slew of media written about that. We're not even talking about quality yet, but just around cost variation for in-network providers. And so I think the
the understanding of that as a writ large as a country has changed. And I think Castlight played a large role in that. Now, are we at the place where every time you consume healthcare, you're actually looking to see what's the highest value decision, both cost and quality? The answer is no, certainly not. But I think we've started that dialogue. I think cost and quality transparency platforms and some guidance around those have helped that, but we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I agree with you, we've made progress, but I do think that we're not yet at the point, just the same way as when I go on to Amazon and I look and see, you know, I want to buy something that was popular this past winter, at least in New York, were outdoor heaters, right? Because so we could entertain outside and do that in a socially responsible way. But I could go online and I could read the reviews and I would have a pretty good sense, you know, if I'm buying one for X or I'm buying one for 10X, what it is I'm getting. I think we still have room to go and a ways to go, unfortunately, until the consumer can do that. You know, one of the things we always say at Lumeris is that what makes obviously healthcare that much different is that to do that, you really often need a physician to help you. I don't have that level of depth of knowledge to make those same level of choices, because ultimately this impacts my healthcare. So I think we have made amazing strides. I think we've still got a ways to go, but it's going to be fascinating to watch as we move forward here over the next decade. That's for sure. So your LinkedIn, for those that haven't seen it, I love the tagline, right? It's author, mom, athlete, and then healthcare executive working to improve the world. So my first question, are these in order of importance?
It's funny, as you read that, I was just literally thought to myself, it should actually say mom, because if it is in order of importance, it should be mom first by far. It should probably be mom, athlete, healthcare executive, author. It's probably the right order of importance. So they're in there, but maybe not ordered the correct way. I'm trying to work it out.
First, I thought I'd forgotten how to do things alphabetically. And then I'm like, no, surely my high school education was better than that. But it's fascinating you put those in. So tell us a little bit about why each one of those are important and why you put them in, because I'd imagine there are 50 attributes and qualities that you could have used for your tagline, but you pick those. So tell us a little bit about those.
Well, first of all, I'm complimented the fact that you think that I have more than four assets. The 50 might be. I don't know what those are, but we can offline about that. But I'm actually going to start in my order of importance, which is mom. And it is for two reasons. One is because I have three children. I call them the foxes. They are, they're hilarious. They're 8, 10, and 12 right now. And they are the center of everything. But I also have learned so much from being a mom, how I tend to them, care for them, inspire them or try to inspire them and discipline them, that has translated so much into the business world. And I wrote an article early days of Castlight that I never published. And I had this one day where I was having these same conversations at work that I was having in my house with my children. They were slightly different words used, but the concepts were exactly the same. And I very, very often in the business world think to myself, like, who's your mom? Like, did your mom intend for you to act this way? Right. And so trying to think of those principles. One of the key things in our house is we never say the word can't, because I believe that once you start to put limits on yourself, you believe those limits. We often use you're not allowed to, like that one is definitely you're not allowed to, but you can do anything. You're just not allowed to jump off the roof, but you could fly, but you're not allowed to try that while mom's with you in the house, sort of thing. I think second is athlete, and it's a large part of me. Every day I find at least an hour to do some sort of cardio workout, run, bike, swim. But also there's this idea around endurance, and that sort of translates into the business world, particularly in startups, right? Which is you get up every day and you do the work. And there's something incredibly rewarding to getting up every day, even when you don't want to do the work, to get to the finish line, to drive forward. Healthcare executive is kind of what I've been employed to do. That's been paying the bills for a while. So that's my tagline. My parents still to this day ask me, can we still tell people you're a doctor? Do you still see patients? I say, you can tell people whatever you need to tell people to make you feel good about yourself. That's all, it's all fine. And then author, and I think that one probably started at the front in the LinkedIn because it was after writing the book and we were trying to promote the book that I wrote. So that's probably was the order there. But I did have an opportunity to write a book called Decoding Health Signals, and which really described how what we did at Livongo, and I was responsible for the product marketing, engineering, data science, clinical, but what we had done was create an experience by deeply understanding the condition for people. You've made a comment that I registered in the back of my brain around believing that physicians play a role in healthcare. And I think they absolutely play a role in healthcare. However, as a physician, I think they play less of a role than the healthcare ecosystem thinks that they do play. And so this idea around, in order to get anybody to do anything, you have to deeply understand what it is that motivates them. And as you build solutions to bring to market, it is, you know, truly living in their shoes for a while and understanding, you know, how to change behavior. And let me give you an example. You know, we hired a lot of our own internal workers at Livongo with chronic conditions. And I live with type 1 diabetes because it's a very different to say, oh, those diabetics, they should X, Y, or Z, than to actually be one of those people and actually have to do that every single day, 365 days a year for the rest of your life, right? So there's a very judgment mentality around, I can't believe that those diabetic people, we refuse to use the word diabetic. We would say those people who have diabetes, because they're people first and foremost. You have to understand what motivates us. Very few of us wake up every day and say, I want my hemoglobin A1C to be less than 7 because that's the endocrinology guidelines. No, we wake up, what do? We say, I've got a full agenda. Nigel's gonna interview Jenny in a podcast and I have to prepare for that and make sure this is done. We're not thinking about these specific things that healthcare physicians are trained to kind of judge and look at guidelines. So this idea around, how do we deliver this experience by deeply understanding our people? I referenced Dr. Roger Nelson at the Mayo Clinic. And one of the things I liked about him is like, he got how to motivate me, right? You know, I was a 12-year-old independent, fiercely independent, you know, wanted to go to the Olympics as a runner. And he figured out how to motivate me to care for my diabetes because of who I was, not because of the clinical guidelines. And that's what we're trying to do, I think, in healthcare as we create these solutions.
And that's great. And so I couldn't agree with you more that a lot of those different things are cross into the business world, right? And I think, but they also cross the other way as well. I a few years ago, I read a book by Stuart Diamond. It's called Getting More. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's really about the art of negotiation and how, sort of the whole concept of win-win is sort of an old concept. And really it's about how do you understand a lot of what you just said, really, how do you understand the, your endocrinologist when you were 12 is naturally would have been a perfect example of this. How do you understand the other person's situation and how do you enable them to sort of get what they might want, but also at the same time enable you to get what you want as well. And it's something that ironically I took back into being a parent, right? And when you reframe it in different ways, it's amazing how they respond well to it. And I've done a number of LinkedIn posts, but I would say I learned, as much from sport that I've applied to the business world than from any formal education that I've ever had. And I look at some, my kids today don't have enough. Yes, they do sport out of school, but they're self-motivated to do that. But within the school setting themselves, it's incredible how little exercise there is. And I think that's got to change because it's just separate about the importance of exercise, but just the lessons we learn around teamwork, supporting others, not getting on somebody's back if they make a mistake, because that just leads them to make more mistakes. And that there's so many lessons from sport.
Mental stamina.
Yeah, no, I, on.
Yeah, it's funny because when you look at resumes, there are a few things that stand out to me. And people who like try something a little AB normal, like they have something a little weird, I always think is interesting because it shows that they're proud of who they are and they're willing to share that on a resume, right? So people who put on, I don't know, like magician or, you know, I do homing pigeons or something kind that's a little bit AB normal. But then same with athlete, like look at team sports and almost always team sports for me, because I think you're to your point, you learn. And in the work in the business world, it is a team sport. It's 100% team sport. It's about building a team, motivating a team, being a player, which means sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. How do you handle both sides of that? How do you win? How do you lose gracefully? Like great lesson.
Yeah, totally agree. So you touched on Livongo briefly there. Tell us a little bit more, I mean, about what you had set out to achieve, maybe a little bit about, seems like the end of it was quite a wild ride as you went through multiple transactions. And in particular, would love to learn, you know, what excites you the most as you look back about what you achieved there.
Yeah, so I think the mission of Livongo, what we set out to achieve, and every employee I think would be able to quote our mission statement, which was empower people with chronic conditions to live better and healthier lives. That's what our goal was, and it really was this idea around those of us with chronic conditions or with loved ones with chronic conditions, like how do we actually make their life easier? And in making things easier would improve their health, and improving their health would reduce the healthcare costs, right? Three value propositions. People had to love a new experience, had to make them clinically better and reduce costs. What I would say is it was a wild ride toward the end. In fact, I just got 3 boxes of tombstones from the bankers literally just the other day, which was like the IPO, the convertible debt offering, the secondary offering, and then the transaction with Teladoc. So like they all came at once because it was such a whirlwind effort those last 18 months. I think you asked what I was most proud about, and I would say 2 things. One was the team that we built. We built an incredibly mission-driven, oriented team, and that goes a long way in terms of getting things done. I think without that leadership and focus on building our own internal team and an internal values, we never would have been able to accomplish what we did from a business standpoint. From a business standpoint, the thing that I'm most proud about is that we changed lives for people with chronic conditions. In fact, the day that we sold, we merged with Teladoc, the $18.5 billion got all the news press, but internally we celebrated, we had achieved over 1 million active users on our set of solutions. That was the thing that our team was most proud about. And so again, it was really around changing lives. We made a big emphasis every time we had an internal town hall or an external conference to bring our users on stage and have them speak to us. And it was really an incredibly powerful component that we knew we were making lives better. We also knew that there's a lot more work to go ahead. Really excited to have done the transaction with Teladoc that moved what we had built further down the field. And there's a whole other, you know, they're maybe at the 5 or 10 yard line now. So there's a lot more yardage still to run to accomplish what I think can be built in terms as we look to change the healthcare ecosystem, particularly for people with chronic conditions, but could not be, again, more proud of the team we built and the way we changed lives.
Right. No, it's excellent. Congrats to you on everything you achieved there. You know, one of the topics that is close to both my heart and close to the things we try to do at Lumaris is to do what we can to help reduce the inequality of healthcare that exists in the country. You know, it's really terrible, right? The America in the world we are today, and the innovation we have, and how great this country is, particularly for, you know, someone who wasn't born here. It's an incredible country. And yet we have such inequality of care. So I was fascinated by your recent post when you joined the board of CityBlock, that it was all about the inequality of healthcare. And I must admit that I was not aware that was so core to CityBlock's mission. I again, maybe misinformed, but saw CityBlock slightly differently. So tell us a little bit about why you joined the board and how can we tackle health inequality? It's such an important topic.
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. I'm going to talk about maybe three different parts about health and inequality through three different organizations. The first one is I'm actually going to reflect back on, I'll get to City Black because that's the one that I'm most excited about at the moment. So like, I will not forget your question. I'm going to start actually with Livongo and this idea around touching people who are in need. One of the things that we did as a startup and now General Catalyst does with their whole portfolio of companies, so that's the second organizational component here, is actually put aside a bunch of equity pool. So when the company has an exit, that equity goes to a service orientation as a nonprofit. And so Livongo was hugely successful from an IPO and a transaction. That equity was incredibly valuable. We created millions of dollars as part of the core central thesis to driving Livongo. And we had, you know, three different, you know, key ideas where we wanted to donate that money. But the reason I bring that up is, you know, that was General Catalyst was a co-creator, founding member, early venture team. They now hold that same principle in terms of responsible and innovation as we build in the healthcare ecosystem. So there's ways to do that, which I think is really a really interesting component. City Block is really focused on the populations of people who have not been served well. So they have a large part of their portfolio is Medicaid population. And very few, almost zero, I might venture to say, companies in digital healthcare have received funding or been successful to manage risk in Medicaid population, right? And they're doing that digitally and at scale with a core focus on improving the lives for that population. And if you've not met Aya, Ram, and Toyin, the co-founders of City Block, they are an incredible duo. And they have just like, they emanate passion around the care for these people and driving a business and that can actually deliver a new business model and care models at scale. I am so proud to be on the board and am actively involved in a regular recurring basis because I feel so passionate both about the team, they're building the right team, but about the space and what they're able to deliver. So it'll be really a fun, I think, to get to watch and to follow City Block over time. They have a great start and lots more to come.
You know, that's great. And again, I'm sure you'll bring a lot of value to them as well as you take that role. So what else would you like to see sort of the broader healthcare ecosystem doing to tackle health inequality?
Sure. Well, I think there's a number of things, right? I think payment reform, I think going to value-based payments where people are, you know, allowed to see what that looks like. Again, back to our earlier costs around cost and quality transparency. I think creating solutions for all walks of people. If you think about like digital health and healthcare in general, as we collect data, we have an ability to drive really quickly and understand differentiated outcomes at levels that are greater than kind of large populations. And truly understanding, you know, what does it look like if you're African American or if you're Asian, or if you're a woman, if you're a man, if you're transgender, and we're applying the same clinical treatment to you with the same utilization of words, you know, like it's not, you're not going to have the same outcomes, right? We understand that people, you know, I was just thinking about this today. I was on a call earlier with my old chief medical officer, Dr. Bimal Shah, and he was describing to me, he lives in Durham, North Carolina, that his nanny does not want to receive the vaccine, and she's a Black woman, and it's part of their family. And he was describing that he completely understands her prejudice given where she grew up and what her experience in the healthcare ecosystem has been. And so we have this idea that, wow, isn't the vaccine great for us? And why would these people not take it? It's back to our earlier conversation, like, well, they have good reason. They have good reason to not take it. So what is the reasoning and how do we think about that? And what is the solution then that we can give to them that allows them to achieve the same health outcome, either through explanation or through, frankly, a different solution, right, to get to the same health outcome. So it's, again, this thinking out of the box rather than putting people like, wow, these people didn't do what the healthcare specialist said they should do, therefore they're at fault, versus let's figure out belief systems and access and figure out how we can deliver to these people options to achieve the same healthcare outcomes. that, you know, again, we've been, and I went to Johns Hopkins for medical school. Like, you can't get more classic. They wouldn't even let, you know, med students take the elevator. We had to climb 8 stairs to prevent, like, to present short of breath, right? It was short white coat until you became a doctor, like very, very traditional. There's a lot of great stuff that has come out of that, very scientific, but I think there's a different approach, which is to say, let's look more at individual and populations of people that are different from the, you know, white men in the clinical trials, right? And not just like, is the medicine working or not, but like, what's the belief system? What's the access? And so, you know, I had somebody tell me recently that they thought one of the most successful traits of new companies or new ideas is people who are not linear thinkers. Right. And that they can actually truly take a problem and say, like, here's 10 different ways to solve the same problem. And people be like, that's a crazy way to, like, you're going to try to open the door by shooting a rubber band at the fish tank to break the water to flood. You're like, but the idea is right, because we can then start to iterate and find the right solution to bring to other people. I think that's a large part of health disparities. Right. We build one thing, we build one mousetrap, and we're confused why it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And in fact, probably proven by the fact that some of the great models of care in this country, like Kaiser, have struggled when they've taken the model outside of their home state, because what works in one model, particularly when you control a lot of the pieces of the healthcare ecosystem, doesn't work as well in other parts. Although the flip side to it, there's something great about tradition. I took my kids recently before the pandemic to see the college I went to in Cambridge, and they were like, what do you mean you can't walk on the grass? Why don't you just walk straight across the grass? And I'm like, no, you just don't do that. That's tradition. You have to be a fellow to be able to walk across the grass. And at the same time, there is something special about tradition that holds some elements of society together. But I think also that that's what, I mean, you live out on the West Coast, right? And so that's one of the things I think has enabled the West Coast, and obviously particularly the Silicon Valley area, to be such a hotbed of innovation, is because people do think outside of the box, right? And they do think in ways that are atypical to how we might think about it. What fascinates me right now are a whole host of trends in healthcare that have been really sped up by the pandemic, and it's an unbelievable time to be in healthcare, which is truly great. And so what I'm interested in discussing and hearing your perspective, Jenny, is which of these forces that you see, what are the forces you see that are really strong and you're excited about, and which ones will be boomerangs and which ones will be frisbees?
It's a great question. I think that the remote monitoring, like the ease of access to physicians and vice versa for physicians to patients at home, is here to stay. I think that was here. I think that got accelerated, but that I think is not going anywhere. I think that will continue at the, I think that we will see, that said, I think that we will see, in addition to that, a more specification based off of data as to when it's appropriate and when it's not versus it always is, or you get to pick. I think we'll get smarter as a healthcare ecosystem around that. I think laboratory testing, I think this idea around access to COVID testing, and frankly, I think most of us who are pretty impatient as individuals, where you still have to wait 24 to 48 to 72 hours, I think that will change. I think you'll start to see a lot more home-based, and there are today, these businesses have accelerated the let's get checked of the world. Home-based laboratory access with speedy turnarounds, I think, is actually also here to stay. I think this... it's interesting to watch which of the waivers and accelerations within the government from a legislation standpoint are here to stay and what will revert. I think there'll be an inordinate amount of pressure given the now that we've caught a glimpse into the possibility of how we can deliver healthcare at a different scale to continue those. So things such as hospital at home, which was a waiver given because there weren't enough hospital beds in the setting of COVID crisis. I think a lot of us have realized like, wow, there's a lot of people who would rather be in the hospital at their house and actually can do that successfully. Now that's under waiver status for reimbursement. Will that stay or not? I don't know, right? So that one is an open question that has a chance to really be a frisbee. Will it be a boomerang? I'm not sure. There's pressures on both sides, economic pressures on all sides, as well as preference pressures on all sides. And I think that, you know, I went to graduate school, So I went to medical school in 1998. I did my master's in 2005. And at that time I took a healthcare class by Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, health economist at Stanford. And he said, fee-for-service is dead. Fee-for-service is still not dead, right? And that time, and so will we really transition to value-based arrangements? It seems like we're progressing there more and more, that new players are almost always held to that standard. That's super encouraging, which means that incumbents will then come around. So to me, that's, I think, a frisbee that's like, I don't know what those little arrow bar things are, the things that go slower, right, as you throw them in the air.
Right.
And boomerang, I don't have a ton of boomerangs right now, but time will tell, other than the legislation has the power to make things boomerang.
Right. Yeah, we, we've, as Lumaris, obviously long been an advocate and trying to help the movement towards value-based care. And, one of the things we have seen, ironically, in the last year is that a number of health systems are actually speeding up the move to value-based care, because whilst they always felt healthcare was recession-proof, it hasn't been pandemic-proof for them. And had they had more of their revenue in value-based care, they would have been better protected through the pandemic. So we're actually seeing health systems speed up that move to value-based care. I think if you add that to the fact that their business model is really under enormous pressure, on so many sides right now. If you look at the physician aggregators, if you look at home health, the payers, obviously their business model is under pressure as well. So they're gonna be tighter. I think that, in my opinion, is we're at the cusp of sort of an explosion of hospitals really embracing value-based care. But we'll see. We'll see what happens over the next 5 years. All the market indicators we see are that we're about to see a really strong explosion of particularly health systems embracing value-based care. Since you've left Livongo, obviously you've had enormous opportunity to sort of assess the market and see what's out there, and you obviously joined the board of CityBlock. You've become sort of a partner in residence at Endurance Partners. Without giving away anything that is your next great investment, are there areas of healthcare in particular that you obviously we've touched on inequality of care, but are there other areas that you look at and say, hey, this is an exciting area that I'm really focused on, and I'd love to be able to do something unique in this space?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I would say that the answer is there's so many broken pieces of healthcare that there are an inordinate amount of opportunities. So that's the good news and the bad news. And for me, I think personally, the ideas, I am most excited about something that's pretty different from what I've done in the past. Meaning I love the virtual care part. I love what we did with Livongo, but me personally, like doing that in another condition or on another platform is maybe not as interesting to me tackling some of the other aspects of healthcare. And there's plenty of them, right? We talked about laboratory, we talked about hospital at home, we talk about payment reform and kind of how you get to value across the ecosystem. So the answer is, I'm still looking, and I'm not sure exactly where I'll end up, but I am eager to get back into an operating role and really grateful to be a part of the General Catalyst team, whom is very, very smart and fun to work with as we look through what's happening in the ecosystem. I also have a big belief that in order to go really far, we will have to see a lot more partners like we did at Livongo with Teladoc. And the reason to do that was because we really believe that whether we did it with Teladoc or somebody else, like that was the next right step for the business model to actually get to a differentiated scale and provide more outcomes. You know as well as I do that there's a gajillion, and that's a number that my kids tell me is an actual number, a gajillion, of new startups in the ecosystem. And I think a lot about as I'm looking at these different organizations, like how are you going to partner or fit into a larger, broader ecosystem so that we're not creating a bunch of different point solutions all attempting to do the same-ish thing but slightly different. Sometimes when you look at these investor decks, it looks like you've gone to a Mexican restaurant and you always are going to have beans, rice, cheese, and a tortilla. It's just going to be served in a slightly different combination. And so I think that this idea of looking at each at specifics of the industry and really focusing on one or two elements that are incredibly broken and how that can link back into the existing ecosystem is the right approach.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the ecosystem is so ingrained that to believe you can wholesale change it, I think is a fool's errand. In my opinion. And therefore, you know, how do you, having said that, there's so many opportunities, as you say, to make impact. And what excites me right now, perhaps more than ever, and it's sort of somewhat ironic saying that on the back of you know, entering a second year of a pandemic. But, you know, there are a number of windows, I believe, to make really meaningful change. Which I think is beyond important because, as we know, we continue to chart a course of unsustainability in terms of healthcare costs. So I'm hopeful and excited at the same time that we really have some really exciting windows. But I agree with you, figuring out how to do that within the existing system rather than to believe you can change the ecosystem is the best way to think about it.
Well, I think it's kind of the only way, and I'm chuckling to myself because I do sit in Silicon Valley, and I've had the opportunity to meet and interview actually a number of really great thinkers out of other industries, and I've had some more than I can count conversations of like, that's a really great idea. How would you be able to do that? And the answer being, well, we'll just tell the payers that that's what they have to do. And I thought, well, that's, you know, good luck with that. Let me know how that goes, right? Again, there are ways to kind of innovate within the ecosystem. And I think we all need to do that. But I do think partnerships and deep understanding of how that will work is the really only way to get to scale.
Yeah, I think that's right. So we like to end with what we call the quick fire round. And so first question we have in this round is, what's the best piece of advice you were ever given?
Never doubt yourself. Bet on yourself.
That's a good piece of advice. I think we've heard this one already, but just what'd you do to relax, have fun?
Play with kids, go for long runs.
Not surprised, those are the answers there. What advice would you give to your younger self?
This is a tricky one for me because I often think, you know, if I knew I would be where I am today when I was younger, I probably would do things differently, but then I probably wouldn't be where I was today from not doing things differently. And so I think that the only advice that I would give is, again, similar to like that piece of advice, just bet on yourself, know yourself, don't doubt yourself, have conviction and play it out. You don't need to listen to lots of people, but come up with your own conclusion and live to that.
Right. It's great advice. And if you could change one thing about healthcare, what would it be?
Data compatibility.
Yeah. I couldn't.
And ownership. Allow it to the end user. Yes.
Yeah. That would be transformational. Hopefully we'll get there before too long. Jenny, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nigel. Really fun. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Please follow us on your favorite streamer and don't forget to rate us as it helps others find our podcast. I hope you continue to stay safe and healthy. Please join us next time as we tune healthcare. This is Nigel Orenstein in New York.